WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV with your host, Rebecca Terrell. This broadcast is committed to helping you understand the truth behind the news.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today's March 16, and I'm your host, Paul Dragoo. Here's some of the stories we're following. Well, it looks like President Joe Biden is aiming for the Second Amendment once again. On Tuesday, Biden issued a new executive order with the alleged intent to reduce gun violence. In his new order, Biden is calling on the Departments of Justice, Defense, Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, Education, and Veterans Affairs to increase regulations for gun dealers and add background checks and red flag laws. He's even telling the Federal Trade Commission to look at how firearms are marketed.
First, this executive order helps keep firearms out of dangerous hands. As I continue to call on Congress to require background checks for all firearm sales. And in the meantime, my executive order directs my Attorney General to take every lawful action possible to move us as close as we can to universal background checks without new legislation. It's just common sense to check whether someone is a felon, a domestic abuser, before they buy a gun. Second thing it does, the executive order ramps up our efforts to hold the gun industry accountable. It's the only outfit you can't sue these days. It does that by calling out for an independent government study that analyzes and exposes how gun manufacturers aggressively market firearms to civilians, especially minors, including by using military imagery.
Here's government sticking its nose where it doesn't belong. None of this is constitutional, and it almost certainly won't reduce gun violence. It's already against the law to shoot people, and it's already against the law for convicted violent criminals to own firearms. Some gun advocate groups have already responded. The National Shooting Sports Foundation posted a statement saying, in part, that instead of restricting fundamental constitutional rights, the Biden administration should demand that soft-on-crime prosecutors and lawmakers use already existing laws to lock up criminals who misuse firearms to prey on innocent Americans. Gun Owners of America, the No Compromise Gun Group, responded with this on its Twitter page.
Ban assault weapons. Ban them again. Do it now. Enough. Do something.
And last week, we learned that Silicon Valley Bank didn't have enough reserves to avoid complete collapse. According to an exhaustive database created by the Claremont Institute, the bank had donated over $70 million to the Marxist race-baiting Black Lives Matter movement and other related causes. SVB is far from alone. It turns out that dumping money into the coffers of anti-American group was all the rage. The database shows that Bank of America donated over $18 billion to BLM. Altogether, woke corporations donated over $82 billion to the Black Lives Matter movement and related causes. What does this money pay for? Well, violence for one thing, and ridiculous, divisive race drivel for another. And let's not forget about those luxurious mansions for the leaders of BLM. And speaking of destruction, on Tuesday, the state of Ohio filed a lawsuit against Norfolk Southern Railway for the mess it made when one of its trains derailed in Palestine on February 3rd. The lawsuit alleges that the railroad violated state laws regulating control of hazardous waste. It's suing for all costs related to the damage the derailment caused. In the lawsuit, Ohio's attorney general says that Norfolk Southern has a long history of derailments. It says the railway's accident rate has nearly doubled in the last 10 years, that at least 20 of those derailments involve chemical releases, and that incidents have caused injury and death to crew and local citizens. It cites several similar incidents that have happened over the last 10 years. Ohio also says that the accident was avoidable. Quote, "The derailment in East Palestine, Ohio was both foreseeable and preventable. Norfolk Southern's own record demonstrates that it knew and should have taken appropriate steps to prevent the significant harm that the derailment would cause the state," unquote. In a press release 6 days after the incident, Norfolk Southern CEO Alan Shaw told the people of Palestine that Norfolk will work to make things right with Palestine. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the author of the well-documented blockbuster book, The Real Anthony Fauci, recently appeared on the Jimmy Dore Show, where he explained that Dr. Fauci got Pentagon money beginning in 2002 to do gain-of-function research for bioweapons development. But as a result of lab leaks that occurred 12 years later in the U.S., Fauci was forced to shut the research down. He then offshored it, so to speak, to Wuhan, China.
And then in 2014, three of those bugs escaped in high-profile escapes from different labs in the United States. Fauci had built all these new labs at BU, at Galveston, to do his shenanigans. And so three of the bugs escaped, and they received publicity. They had smallpox and a lot of really bad things. And then Congress held hearings on it. Everybody was angry these bugs escaped, and 300 scientists, top scientists, sent letters to Obama saying, you got to shut down Anthony Fauci because he's going to create a pandemic. And so Obama ordered a moratorium. And at that time, Fauci had 18 different gain-of-function experiments he was doing around the United States. Obama ordered him to shut them all down, but he didn't. He instead moved his stuff offshore to Wuhan, where he could do it out of sight of these 300 scientists and nosy White House officials who were trying to shut him down.
Did the U.S.-funded gain-of-function result in COVID-19? It sure looks like that could be the case. So joining me to discuss today's stories is Editor-in-Chief of The New American, Gary Benoit. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you, Paul.
So why should Americans who aren't necessarily gun owners care about Biden's executive order?
Because such Americans should care about freedom, and they should also care about the dangers of tyranny. This is why the Founding Fathers considered the right to keep and bear arms so important that they included it into the Constitution explicitly in the form of the Second Amendment. The necessity of having a well-regulated militia for the security of a free state. They recognized that without guns, that there then would be a monopoly of power on the part of government.
Yeah,
and that government could then use those guns to take away the freedoms of the people.
No, that doesn't happen, Gary.
Oh no, government would never do anything wrong, would it?
Well, I'm from Eastern Europe, and it only happened, I think, in all the countries before tyrants took over. Obviously,
sure.
It happened in Hitler's Germany. It happened, I believe, in Albania, and so many in Russia and whatnot. But it's so silly to hear people say that, use that as a talking point. It's like, oh no, government would never do that. It's like, what are you talking about?
Well, all you have to do is look at history, and you cited Nazi Germany. That is really an excellent example, because the German people were disarmed. The government had the guns. They had a monopoly of power.
Right.
And look at how they exercised that power. They killed millions upon millions of people, including 6 million Jews.
Yeah.
And you have these tragedies, such as what happened in the Warsaw Ghetto, where there were, you know, Jews who did fought back, but they had virtually no firearms. But they still try to fight back. But, you know, why did all these Jews go into the concentration camps? Why didn't they resist? They didn't have the means to do so.
Well, there was resistance, but I think a good point is that there obviously wasn't enough
right,
to stop
exactly.
We know there were resistance.
Right.
There was resistance all over Europe.
Right. Oh, sure. And there were Jews who resisted too, but I'm talking about as a whole.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And some of, I think it was the Shooting Sports Association who had mentioned in part of their press release that some of this is already law. You know, they keep talking about background checks and these gun show loopholes. And I think most people who've been to gun shows, they will probably say things like, when I buy a gun at a gun show, they still do a background check. I don't know how true that is, that you could just go to a gun show and there's no background checks. And of course, as I mentioned, it's already illegal to shoot people.
I know.
And I think most states have laws where convicted criminals cannot own firearms anyway. So I don't know why they keep saying these things that are not true. And what's sad, I think, is that people believe this.
Well, the reason they engage in this propaganda and the reason they say things that are not true is because the fix isn't at the top, because there is a plan, there is an agenda. And that agenda ultimately is to disarm the American people so that the U.S. government would have a monopoly of power,
yeah,
just like Hitler once had a monopoly of power. And people really should stop to think about that. What enabled Hitler to kill millions upon millions of people?
Well, furthermore,
and it's because he was able to exercise unrestrained,
right,
the power of government. And so, you know, the right to keep and bear arms, you know, obviously we have hunters, obviously we have people who enjoy target shooting and that kind of thing, but that's really what it's not all about. Is to have the means to defend ourselves against government should government become tyrannical.
Absolutely. And what stopped Hitler? Armies with guns.
Right. I know.
It's just, yeah, obviously. Yeah.
And that's another thing, too, is when you listen at the propaganda, it sounds as if what is being said is, oh, we got to get rid of all the guns.
Yeah.
Right? But they're really, they are not talking about that. What they're talking about is who controls the guns, who has the guns.
Yeah.
Should it be the public at large?
Who has a monopoly?
Or should it be the government alone?
Right, right. And we have a government, we have a regime, we have a deep state that wishes to take complete control. And obviously, guns is part of that. You know, I mean, you could have seen this clearly when during COVID tyranny, they said, stay in your home.
Yes.
We'll send you your check. We'll bar the doors to your church. We'll say, you know, we'll muzzle your face, and this is what you must do. And they're like, 2 weeks, 2 weeks. We'll do this 2 weeks. And then 2 weeks goes by, 2 months goes by, 2 years go by in some places, and they still didn't lift that. It's like, at what point do you start saying, maybe we need to make sure that government is as decentralized and disempowered as possible, and one way to do that is by taking that power and transitioning it to us.
Sure. And what you're saying, Paul, is let's get back to the Constitution.
Oh!
Because that's exactly what the Constitution
does.
Right, right.
Yeah. What about the other stories? Do you have anything to say about it, the other ones?
Well, which ones would you like to talk about? Well, there were four of them.
The derailment. I don't actually, I haven't really studied up on those, on that particular railway, but that seems odd that these incidents continue to happen. I read a large part of the lawsuit, and I think most Americans aren't even aware that Norfolk, apparently, they do have a history of this. These cars,
right,
come off, and they have all these very hazardous materials, and they permeate the town, and people get sick, and they get into the rivers and whatnot.
Well, the very fact that there is a lawsuit, and the very fact that in the lawsuit it says that laws have been broken, that wrongs have been done, indicates that the solution is at hand. Obviously, it's horrible what has happened, but the solution is at hand based on existing laws and based on the system of government that we have, including,
yeah,
the judicial system. But, of course, this is being used as a rationale for more and more regulation. And isn't it incredible, or maybe it's not incredible, Paul, that President Trump, who left the White House back in early of 2021, January 2021, that there are people who are blaming President Trump for what happened.
Well, of course.
Because, well, he didn't have all these regulations. But why is it that some people think that the government is a solution? You know, they may be against big tech. They may be against consolidation of power in other areas. But they want more and more government leading to total government. And that doesn't make any sense whatsoever, because at least with a corporation, you can vote with your feet.
Yeah.
You can vote with your money. You can say, okay, I'm not going to do business with that corporation, right? If you don't,
yeah,
like the corporation, do business with somebody else. But with government and with its monopoly of power, government has guns, government has the court system that forces everyone to participate. So why do we trust the government and want to put all the power into the hands of a government? Now, some people may claim that's anti-government today to make such a proclamation, but it's not anti-government. It's pro-limited government. It's pro-constitutional government. It's pro-sound government.
Right, right.
You know, if people wanted to say be against the accumulation of total power in government, that's anti-government, you think that means they would support Hitler's Germany or Stalin's, right, Russia?
Well, I think part of it is that, you know, it's tragic. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe it's that we always think that's the answer. Like a large portion of the population, whenever something happens, is like, oh, we need more regulation. It's like, well, it's already illegal. Well, I don't know if it's not, but there already are regulations about obviously dumping hazardous materials mm-hmm. into nature and into the environment, things like that. You know, and furthermore, the question is, it's like, what is Norfolk doing because that all these things keep happening? And does it end? So how would a free market solution be? Would it be the vendors would say, look, we're not shipping with you anymore because apparently you can't keep these things on the track. Sure.
Well, yeah. A free market solution is that a government, a business that's not doing what it should, should end up going out of business.
Yeah,
but and then somebody else would step in. But when you have more and more monopoly, and really what we have today in this country is more and more fascism, by which I mean an economic system where more and more the large corporations, such as Big Pharma, and big tech are in bed with big government. And that is the definition of economic fascism, that merger of government and big business.
Let's talk about what we mentioned in the show earlier that we knew was obviously the case, and that being that SVP received all this or sent, put out all this money for Black Lives Matter. But what we saw from Claremont's database was so much more than I guess I knew, but it's mm-hmm. not surprising. What's obviously really concerning about this is that Black Lives Matter is an anti-American,
yes.
race-baiting group that makes things worse, way worse. It has sowed such acrimony and is infecting our society. What in the world are these companies thinking?
Well, they're part of the problem.
You're like, well, I'm not them. I'm sorry, I didn't mean.
Yeah, they're part of the problem. They're following the agenda.
Yeah.
And the agenda is the fact that by having demonstrations in the street and by causing civil turmoil, and in particular by attacking local police departments, by having a campaign to defund the police.
Right.
What this does is it creates anarchy.
Yeah.
And the anarchy leads to people demanding that something has to be done to quell the anarchy. And what is being offered as a solution is to move more and more in the direction of a national police force. Now, it may not be packaged right now in terms of, well, we have to have a nationalized police force. We have to nationalize police. But what is happening is that more and more there is pressure to put local police departments under the thumb of the central government and Washington, D.C., so that those local police departments are no longer independent, so that they're no longer responsible to protect and serve their local communities.
Right.
So that instead their responsibility becomes to carry out the dictates of the central government in Washington, D.C.
Do you think that these corporations are aware of what the plan is here?
I think it depends on the corporation. I'm sure some people go along to get along because really what we're talking about is an organized conspiracy. And
yeah.
Of course, I know the word conspiracy is a word that's...
you're not supposed to say it, Gary.
You're not supposed to say it in polite company. But really what we deal with the New American and what we deal with the New American's parent magazine,
yes.
the John Birch Society, is not conspiracy theory, but conspiracy facts. And there is a...
There certainly is. We have documented.
There is a difference. The documentation is overwhelming.
Yeah, I think so. And now people, when I was sharing this with a friend once, he was like, well, I don't think a conspiracy exists because it's so obvious. So, but thank you, Gary, for that.
That's a good point. It's becoming more and more an open conspiracy.
Absolutely. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
And for our last story, U.S. prosecutors for the Virgin Islands are suing JPMorgan Chase Bank for allegedly supporting Jeffrey Epstein's decades-long child sex trafficking racket. Prosecutors allege that J.P. Morgan knowingly, negligently, and unlawfully provided and pulled the levers through which recruiters and victims were paid and was indispensable to the operation and concealment of the Epstein trafficking enterprise. However, with a conference of the parties scheduled for today and with J.P. Morgan being notorious for fixing things, it wouldn't be surprising if the lawsuit fizzles away after a few million dollars changes hands. The New American's investigative journalist William Jasper has written an in-depth story on J.P. Morgan's history of bad behavior and its alleged ties to Epstein. Stay tuned for my interview with him after these messages.
The John Birch Society has been working tirelessly since 1958 to preserve freedom, safeguard the Constitution, and restore our God-given rights. We continually educate voters and lead the freedom movement. Join us as we work against a tyrannical one-world government. United as one, we can defeat this conspiracy against a free America. JBS founder Robert Welch said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Join us in restoring this great nation.
Imprisonment, forced labor, permanent separation from my family, perhaps death. I knew what could happen to people who were caught trying to defect, but the watchtowers stood yards away. The possibility of a new life in a different world, one without tyranny, was within sight. The West. I thought of the rewards no longer crushed under the boot of communism. I would work and make money, no longer restrained by the chains of collectivism. I would say what I wanted, without fear of spies and informants nearby. I would be free. The frozen rain and Romanian mud seeped through my gloves and cloths. I fantasized about a fire burning in the wood stove of my parents' home, but I pushed those thoughts from my mind, closed my eyes, and waited for the cover of the darkness.
Get Defector, a true story of tyranny, liberty, and purpose by Mark Hobovkovich with Paul Dragu. A thrilling page-turner that will remind you how precious yet vulnerable freedom is. Available at shopjbs.org or Amazon. For a limited time, get 20% off your entire order using promo code DEFECTOR20 when you purchase Defector at shopjbs.org.
Welcome back. I'm thrilled to be joined by the New American senior editor, William Bill Jasper, who's written a great story on the alleged ties between J.P. Morgan Bank and Jeffrey Epstein's criminal sex trafficking enterprise. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you, Paul. Pleasure being here.
So, Bill, what are Virgin Islands prosecutors suing J.P. Morgan Bank to get?
Well, as you probably know, Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted sex pervert who died in prison awaiting his trial in 2019, had one of his numerous properties, a couple of his numerous properties in the Virgin Islands, the most infamous being his orgy island, Little St. James, where very wealthy celebrities, politicians, executives would go for various sex games there, including allegedly with minors. And that is what he was being prosecuted for in the federal case when he was in prison. Now, the Virgin Islands has brought this lawsuit on behalf of victims going after J.P. Morgan Chase, largest bank in the United States, which was the bank for Epstein. He had over 50 accounts at J.P. Morgan, which the Virgin Islands lawsuit claims was the paymaster for his various alleged crimes, including bringing underage girls, even as young as 12 years old, allegedly, from France, from Europe, from Ukraine, Russia, for his clients and for his own pleasure in the Virgin Islands. And so they have brought a lawsuit on behalf of the victims to force J.P. Morgan to pay the victims. And J.P. Wow. Morgan, of course, is claiming they had nothing to do with it. They had no idea what he was up to.
And so they have to prove that J.P. Morgan was involved in this and that they knew. Now, your article includes that there apparently the implication is that the CEO, Jamie Dimon, knew very well what was happening and may have even been involved to some degree. Is that correct?
Yes. Now, there's no allegation at this point that he, Jamie Morgan, the CEO, a billionaire,
Jamie Dimon,
probably the most famous banker in the world now, that he personally was involved in any of the sex trade that Epstein is involved with. The allegation is that he knew what Jess Staley, his other top executive, who was the closest one to Jeffrey Epstein, that Jamie Dimon must have known. And in fact, there are emails that they obtained already, which are the emails from the JP Morgan accounts from Jess Staley, the CEO, who worked very closely with mm-hmm. Epstein for many years, in which it is very, very clear that Jess Staley, who went on to become CEO of Barclays Bank in the UK, was clearly personally involved. He made many trips to Orgy Island, to as well as to Epstein's mansion in New York, which was the largest, most expensive penthouse in Manhattan, just down the street from JP Morgan Chase. Everyone in Manhattan knew by the time this was unraveling what Jeffrey Epstein was about. And he had brought much business. Jeffrey Epstein had brought much business to JP Morgan. So the Virgin Islands case seems to be very strong. And Judge Jed Rakoff, federal judge, last week swept aside JP Morgan's claims that it was irrelevant, that Dimon had no involvement or knowledge, and ruled that JP Morgan did have to turn over the documents regarding Jamie Dimon that the Virgin Islands was seeking.
Yeah. Now tell us about JP Morgan has a history of chicanery.
Yes. So one of the things I go into in my article is, and we've covered this over the years at the New American, is that JP Morgan, the largest bank, they have the largest capitalization of any bank in the United States. Second is Bank of America. But they have over 5,000 branches, over 16,000 ATMs. So particularly they have expanded since the 08-09 mortgage crisis, with billions of dollars, trillions of dollars that were given out to the banks in the wake of that, JP Morgan being one of the big recipients, they bought up a lot of the other banks that were shut down as a result of the mortgage crisis, which the big banks, the banksters, the Wall Street banksters, as they're called, were responsible for. So JP Morgan has, in fact, pleaded guilty numerous times to very serious felony charges and have paid over $20 billion wow. In the last few years to the federal government. And in when they have pleaded guilty, it has always been in a deferred prosecution agreement. So they've worked out a sweetheart deal with the Justice Department and the Securities and Exchange Commission in each of these cases that, okay, if you don't prosecute us, we will pay a fine and we will agree to have regulators check our and monitor our business. And we will put in place various internal monitoring regulations so that these abuses won't happen again. Because each time this happens, banks pay, in this case, JP Morgan, but this has happened with the other big banks too. They'll pay hundreds of millions of dollars, or in some cases, $1 billion or more. and promise they're going to do better. And then they go right on doing the same thing. So they've been among the various conspiracy charges. These are not conspiracy theories. The federal government actually charged them with conspiracy. And they agreed in many of these cases that, yes, there was conspiracy by their traders, by their executives, to rig the markets, to rig the precious metals markets, to rig a number of different important things that have jeopardized the whole banking establishment, the whole financial establishment, the whole world economic picture, and they've gotten away with it. And they simply pay a fine, which does not in any way stop them from continuing on the same path.
Well, it sounds like they figured out a way to keep doing what they're doing without any serious, I mean, maybe some would consider $20 billion, you said billion, right?
Billion, serious. Yes.
But for the bank, perhaps that's relatively small compared to what they get out of it, right?
Right. I mean, I've seen in each of these cases computations by various critics, economists and accountants who say, well, that just amounts to 2% or 5% or 1% of their profits that they've made on those criminal enterprises.
Right.
And so it's just a cost of doing business. And these fines never come out of the pockets of Jamie Dimon or any of the other executives. They come out of the pockets of the shareholders of JP Morgan Chase, or from the insurance companies, or from the taxpayers when they get bailed out.
You had mentioned sweetheart deals, and today's kind of a big day in this case. Is there any danger of another sweetheart deal being struck and this basically fizzling out like you implied in your lead in the story?
Yes. So today, well, we'll see what happens today. But the Virgin Islands, when they brought when the Attorney General of the Virgin Islands brought the case, 2 months ago, just days later, she was fired as Attorney General by the governor of the Virgin Islands.
Coincidentally.
And of course, it's speculation, but it's not idle speculation. Dimon and J.P. Morgan and their ilk brought pressure on the governor, and he fired the Attorney General. So the acting Attorney General is handling the case, and she... we don't know what she will do, whether she'll fold or whether she'll be fired, but that certainly sent a signal, and she may not be as aggressive in pursuing this as was originally intended. So really what we're after here is in this case is some transparency. We're trying to find out by getting as many of the records from J.P. Morgan Chase, what has transpired here, because this is indicative of the whole problem that we see in the banking sector, which just this week, the past week, with the Silicon Valley Bank and with Silvergate and with the Republic Bank and all of the others that are in danger now, we have this same syndrome of these top banksters being able to get away with crime after crime after crime, and they are jeopardizing the entire system. And they can do that because the Federal Reserve and the FDIC and Securities Exchange Commission, and for instance, now at the Biden administration, we have Janet Yellen, the former chair of the Federal Reserve, now as Secretary of the Treasury. We have Lael Brainard, former vice chair of the Federal Reserve, running as director of the National Economic Council, and on it goes. We have all of this old boy, old girl network, and the key here all being that all of them are members of the Council on Foreign Relations, and almost all of them have also been speakers at and agenda contributors to the World Economic Forum, which is pushing this Great Reset and A big component of that is resetting the whole world economy. And if you want to reset the whole world economy, you have to collapse the current one. And they've made it very plain that's what they intend to do.
Do you see a component of that in illustrated in this case? Is this part of the racket to collapse, and or is there any aspect of that going on here?
So the Epstein saga in here is very important. It's very integral to all of this. And we have seen how all of these top bankers, corporate execs, from Bill Gates to all of the other ones that have been involved in the Epstein debacle. This is very much tied into the whole intelligence apparatus. Entangle all these people as much as possible so that you have control over them and the institutions that they run.
Wow. I think that's a connection that a lot of people aren't aware of. And maybe when they hear Epstein, they're like, oh, you know, terrible sex trafficker. But there's so much more to this case. And there's so many good folks out there doing great, great work on that. Bill, I want to thank you for your time and for the good work that you're doing, and keep it up, because we look forward to hearing more on this as it continues to develop and its connections, like you said, to the CFR, the World Economic Forum. We'd love to keep up with that and help inform our audience. Thank you very much, sir.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
Just imagine if we have a constitutional convention, the number of people who will be unhappy and the number of people who say the results are not valid, and then they'll just ignore the entire Constitution.
Well, we need just more people that would read the one we have.
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution that usurp power and abuse the constitutional power that they ostensibly have.
If you can't enforce an existing piece of paper, how are you going to enforce a piece of paper that has a little more writing to it? In other words, it's been amended.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
What can you do to elect good representatives and senators in your state legislature who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand?
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The Declaration of Independence proclaims God-given rights, and we intend to protect them. Working with people like you for over 50 years, preserving freedom and building a better tomorrow. Safeguarding the Constitution by limiting government power. We are restoring liberties, educating voters, and leading the freedom movement. Join with us. United, we will defend our rights. We are all Americans. We are the John Birch Society.
The New American's Alex Newman recently interviewed retired chemist Marty Cornell at the Heartland Institute's 15th annual climate summit in Orlando. Cornell said that pursuing the so-called net zero agenda to reduce emissions to nothing by 2050 is extremely dangerous, and it would devastate American families. It would also be impossible to achieve, he added. Let's watch.
Hey everybody, we are at the Heartland Institute's Climate Conference here in Orlando, Florida, and we are with Marty Cornell. He's a retired chemist, used to work for a major international company. Marty, your talk is going to focus on net zero. Yes. We're hearing this a lot. I was just at the most recent UN Climate Summit, and net zero is like the buzzword. We got to go to net zero. What exactly does that mean in layman's terms, and what is that going to mean to an average American?
The actual term is net zero means we're supposed to reduce our emissions of industrial CO2 and methane to effectively zero by 2050. And what does it mean? It means if it occurs, it's going to cost American households and people dearly. It's really dangerous for the world and for the economy.
Do you think it's feasible? I mean, is there a way to get that down to zero?
It's impossible. It's actually impossible.
So why are they talking about it then?
When I'm going to talk about the material impossibility of it and the types of materials you need to make batteries for electronic vehicles or battery backup for the grid system, or the materials you need for a wind farm, particularly an offshore wind farm, are just impossible. We don't have those materials. To mine those materials, to get enough of them made by 2050 is just impossible.
So you say that's impossible, and yet we've got all the major banks of the world, as you know, have joined on this net zero alliance. I've talked to several state attorneys general who are now pursuing investigations into this, but the banks are still moving ahead, most of them. How does this get stopped if the banks, the governments, the businesses, and everybody else is moving in lockstep on this?
There's a whole industrial complex over this thing. There's a lot of money to be made. So the average person's going to get hurt, but these people are going to make a lot of money on it. So how it gets stopped is people are going to have to get hurt. Mm. I'm from Texas, and we had a couple winter stores. One of them, a couple years ago, Uri, shut down our state for, I think it was 5 days, and at least 300 people died. Okay, so those deaths, they're trying to find an excuse for it, but if we have another one of these things, the more of this green energy that we put on the grid that is weather dependent, the less dependable energy that we have, dispatchable energy that we have, means that we're going to have a lot more of these outages. In fact, they're going to have to promote things to have people stop using energy so that we don't have these major blackouts. But they're going to be unavoidable. So when that occurs, I think what's going to happen, unfortunately, is a lot of people are going to get hurt, and then the politicians are going to have to wake up to it.
So you mentioned money as a possible motivating factor. And you know, there's clearly huge amounts of money at stake here. But I know we're in the realm of speculation here a little bit, but what do you think is driving the people behind the net zero? Do you think it's just money? Is there some ideological component to this? Why are they doing it?
Yeah, well, there's two different things. The people in power, the elites, are doing it because they gain power, just like they did for COVID. During the shutdown, they had an experiment where they said, we can gain a lot of power by doing this stuff, and we can just more centralize the power. Well, they're going to apply the same sort of thing to climate. They gain power. Some people say that it's not a religion. It's all about the power. But it is. They have to have a constituency that believes it's a religion. It's a dogma. Mm-hmm. You can't talk to a lot of the people about it because it's just something they believe, just like a religion. So there is a religious element to it. But for the people in control, the elites, it's about power. You don't think that John Kerry is going to reduce his carbon footprint, do you?
Is he going to sell his private jet? That's a good question.
I will commit right here that I will reduce my carbon footprint to no more than John Kerry.
That's awesome. So for everyday Americans out there who are hearing this, they don't know the science. They don't know who's telling the truth, but they're concerned about higher prices. They're concerned about losing freedoms. What would you say to them? What should they be doing? How can they learn about this and become informed?
That's a real difficult question about how to get the message out. Most of the people on the skeptical side, which I am, have a very, very difficult time getting our message out because of censorship. Mm-hmm. Now, Musk and what he's done maybe opens it a little bit. It remains to be seen how that's going to go. But getting the message out to the general public is nigh on impossible. So our approach and what we're trying to do is deal with the politicians. I'm from Texas, going to Austin and deal with a lot of people in Austin and talk to them about it. If you talk to a lot of these people, congressmen, representatives, senators, a lot of them are pretty knowledgeable. But they're not going to come out and say that this climate scare is false. It's a fake thing because that's the third rail. So they'll talk about it rising energy costs and this sort of stuff, but to come out and very few politicians have come out and really say this whole climate CO2 global warming thing is a false thing. That's political suicide. So the way to do it, I think, is to get enough people on board so they start attacking the cost of energy and doing some things that are reasonable rather than go out and attack the whole theory, hypothesis of climate, human-caused climate change.
Fascinating. And is there any place people can follow you? Are you on Twitter? Is there a website people can go to?
I'm not on Twitter, but I'm part of a group called The Right Climate Stuff, which is formed by mostly retired people from NASA of the Apollo era. These are the guys that put men on the moon and that kind of stuff. So the rightclimatestuff.com is someplace people can go. And we publish a lot of papers on this thing and position papers. So they can go there and get some of that information.
Excellent. Marty Cornell, retired chemist, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Brandon House. Several years ago, I worked with a team of experts, and we developed Extractgevity. Extractgevity is an all-natural energy and health supplement. An all-natural energy and health supplement. I take it every day, and I have for years. It comes in a powder form. You mix it with water and enjoy. It includes bilberry extract, grapeseed extract, red wine extract, and pine bark extract, along with vitamin C. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. Go do your own homework on the benefits of these supplements. And then you can order it at WVWTVstore.com, or you can call 901-468-9357. That's 901-468-9357 or at WVWTVstore.com. I've been taking it every day for years. In fact, a lot of times in the afternoon, I take a glassful because it is that all-natural energy and health supplement. Now, of course, I got to throw out that disclaimer that this product has not been approved or evaluated by the FDA, is not intended to treat, cure, or prevent any disease. But we invite you to check it out at WVWTVstore.com and enjoy Extractgevity, just as I do every day.
If Americans want to remain a free and sovereign nation, more people need to understand the principles and values that built this great nation. At the John Birch Society, we have the organization, the plan, and the resources to do just that. Our founder, Robert Welch, said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Go to jbs.org to learn more, including how you can get involved to work locally and impact nationally. Join the John Birch Society today.
Here's the news, Dad.
Is it, son? Is it?
What about this one, Dad?
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days. There's just too much baloney out there. At the New American, they cut through the baloney and give me the truth.
The truth is hard to find, but the New American has it. Check it out at thenewamerican.com.
All right, parents, listen up. We've all seen the countless examples of how radical leftists have been destroying American schools. It's no longer just about the terrible math and reading levels. Now radical left teachers birthed from liberal universities are forcing gender indoctrination in kindergarten. They're teaching lessons on white guilt.
Freedom Project Academy has perfected live online learning over the course of a decade. I get a ton of great feedback about this program, a ton.
They're built on Judeo-Christian values, a classical curriculum. What does that mean? It means they're taught, your children are taught the way that the founding generations of the country. My own son, Noah, did Freedom Project Academy for several years when he was younger.
The more we tell our friends about these things, the more people will get on board, and I believe that we can be the catalyst to some real change.
We must save the West. Our way of life and our culture is under attack, and because of patriots like you and your project, I have optimism for the future.
The political prisoners locked up in Washington, D.C. over the mostly peaceful protest on January 6 are being horribly abused, and their stories must be told. Tim Rivers is the activist behind the new book, The American Gulag Chronicles, Letters from Prison, which includes letters from the persecuted J6 prisoners. The New American's Alex Newman recently interviewed him. Let's watch.
The media and the government say that these are insurrectionists, they're seditionists, they hate democracy, they're radicals and extremists, they might even be terrorists, and yet here you are speaking out on their behalf. Why?
Well, because they're anything but. If you really look at who these people are and try and get around the mainstream media narrative, you'll find out that they're the people that you played golf with, that you go to work with, they're firefighters, they're policemen. They're clerical folks. These are just a cross-section of everyday America. And it comes out in their letters. I mean, you don't get a chance to meet these people. They're locked down in a gulag. They're not allowed to talk to the press. Even those released are not allowed to speak to the press in many cases. So some folks can't talk to me even. But in their letters, it comes out very clearly who they are, why they went there that day, what happened to them then, and even worse, the conversation that matters to you and I today, what's happening to them right now? Where did their constitutional protections go? Where are their civil rights? Where is due process? Where is the violations of the Brady Doctrine? Where is their exculpatory evidence in their hands where they can find it? We see the videos released to Tucker. They should be released to the public. We have a right to see those videos. I don't want Fox News telling me what is truth and what is not, because frankly, I don't protect it. I don't trust it anymore, any of the mainstream outlets. I need to see it for myself, and so does the American public. This book is these guys' messages in a bottle, really. Before these videos came out, this book will tell you exactly what happened and what they've been going through. And then when you see these videos and you see them correlate with what these men and women have been saying to you, it'll click. And then what do we do? That's the big question, right? That's the next conversation that matters. What do we do now that we know the facade, now that we understand the narrative was false and that it may have all been a setup and many, many people were involved? Now what do we do? How do we restore these Americans to their proper place in our society?
Well, let's start at the beginning before we go to break, Tim. How do you see what happened on January 6th? What was it that happened there? What should be done, or should anything be done about what happened there? There's still so much fog around what happened. And of course, it's good that they're starting to release the tapes. But as you pointed out, that's only going to Fox, and for good reasons, a lot of people don't trust Fox. But what really happened on January 6th that kicked all of this off?
I think it's pretty evident, to tell you the truth. Most people went there exactly why I've gone to so many rallies and gone to Save America rallies and reawakening rallies, is because people wanted to hear good news about their country. They went there to listen to Donald Trump. They went there to listen to a whole host of people. And by the way, those people were often attacked in public when they spoke before. So there were patriots there to protect them that day. So when they spoke, they would not be attacked and basically injured by Antifa or BLM. And those were the only people who were there with any intent other than to listen to patriotic messages that day. When you see the videos that are coming out, you will see that the problems began with violence inflicted by the Metro Police Department. It all starts right there. And now that the films are coming out, it's so evident and clear.
Tim, what's going on right now? Tell us, for the folks who haven't really been paying attention, what's going on right now with the people who have been scooped up over the last couple of years surrounding this January 6th event?
Well, most of them are still being held or now serving sentences. But what's even more concerning is just this week, people are being scooped up. They have not stopped. They're still coming after people all across this country. We've created a map on our website at j6patriotnews.com where you can see where all these people are being held in FCI facilities, and that's Federal Correctional Institutes, all across this country. It's pretty alarming that we have well over 120 political prisoners in jail in America. That should really wake people up. These are folks who simply went there that day for the most part to express their desire to speak to their representatives and let them know they did not trust what had happened in the election of 2020. There's nothing wrong with that. We are all supposed to do that. That's our constitutional right. So right now there's over 120 and they're still snatching them up. We write to them through the Patriot Mail Project, patriotmailproject.com. You can go there, find the prisoners, write to them, let them know that you support them. And that's how I got involved in this, is I wrote a prisoner. He wrote me back. The letter was crushing. This gentleman was a 22-year Green Beret, Special Forces, 3 Bronze Stars. You can read his story on our website. His name is Jeff McKellop. And that brought me into this fight in a way that that is different. I served with many Special Forces at IBM in my career with the military groups. And I have a great respect for these types of people. There are 27% of the people incarcerated for J6 are veterans, compared to 7% of the U.S. population and 7% of the people who've been arrested. So you got to ask yourself, why is the government so concerned about people who have taken an oath to protect this country?
Why do you think the government is doing this? I mean, I know the latest omnibus, they passed like some $200-something million to keep terrorizing people who are there. They seem to have this obsession with going after these people. And why do you suppose that is?
Well, I believe that you know, my father was a history major, and he used to teach a class called Problems of American Democracy, which could be translated into Americanism versus Communism. And everything my father taught and everything I observed and during those days is coming true in front of us. I speak to people all across the world now because this is an international concern. And I hear the same thing coming back as, oh my God, if America falls, we are all done. It's over for democracy, for freedom, for liberty in this world. And I believe that's the message, that we are seeing an administration that is bent on a path that is, in my opinion, un-American, that is not American values, is not standing for liberty and for justice and for equal justice under the law for everyone. And that should be a concern for all of us. That's the conversation that matters. Is J6 right or wrong? Don't care anymore. I'm really concerned about, is taking away my constitutional right to due process right or wrong? Is taking away my two-way right before I'm convicted of a felony wrong? Is throwing me in prison for basically exercising my 1A right wrong? Where I could go on for a long time because almost every single number up through 10 has been violated by this administration against these people and just ordinary Americans who are speaking out against sex in their schools, transgender, crazy behavior, vaccine deniers. It doesn't really matter. If you don't go with the narrative, you're next. Yeah. And that's their message in this book, by the way. They're trying to tell you, you're next. You can find the book at lettersfromprison.us. And this is their message in a bottle to the American people.
And before we let you go, Tim, why do you call it Gulag, the American Gulag Chronicles? For the folks out there who don't know, of course, Gulag was the infamous Soviet correctional system, so-called. Huge numbers of people died and were tortured to death. Why do you call it a gulag, where these people are being held?
This is my nod to Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who warned us about this in his book, The Gulag Archipelago. It's a three-part book, a very long read. Every American should read it because it was his warning as to what could happen almost overnight in a country when repression is tolerated, because it goes from toleration to complete tyranny. And so the way people were treated in those gulags, the way they were brainwashed, the way they were placed in jeopardy and violence, that's exactly what's happening to these political prisoners in America. Their stories are horrendous. My live interviews with them at our website, j6patriotnews.com, will curl your hair and then make you want to scream. I urge every American to listen to their messages because they're aimed at you.
Excellent. And tell us one more time, Tim, how can people get the book? How can people find your website?
We are at j6patriotnews.com, and you can find the book at lettersfromprison.us. That's lettersfromprison.us.
Tim Rivers, thank you very much for joining us today. Thank you for trying to raise awareness about this critical issue. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate your time.
All righty, folks. That was Tim Rivers. Go check out the websites, get a copy of the book. Really, it's hard to imagine that this is happening in America, but it is. I'm Alex Newman. This is Conversations That Matter for the New American Magazine. Until next time, God bless you all.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Remember to visit thenewamerican.com for more stories that tell the truth behind the news. And make sure to tune in tomorrow when we discuss the growing tensions between Eastern and Western countries. It's going to be a good one.